Okay, so it's going now.
Hi everyone, welcome to Adoption Adventures. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode. I've been contacted by Simon, and Simon shared a little bit of his story and he's asked to be a guest on Adoption Adventures, and I think it's going to be a really, really exciting chat. So, hello Simon.
Hello Richard, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, very well. Simon, could you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Yeah, sure. And thanks for having me on. I'm delighted to chat about this stuff, you know. So I'm Simon Benn. I'm 54. I live up in the north of England near York, kind of between York and Harrogate and Leeds, a little tiny village. I live with my missus and two Labradors and two pigs. Two puny pigs. Everybody has Labradors, but not many people have cuny pigs.
Yeah,
I was adopted when I was 5 weeks old.
Okay,
So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
Mm. So you was adopted at five weeks old.
5 weeks old, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and so this I'll delicately put this, Simon. Judging by your age that you said, I'm going to assume that quite a lot has changed since then to now. Yeah. Do you know sort of how the process was for your parents? Have you sort of learned about that at all?
Yeah. Totally. A lot has changed. So I was told really young that I was adopted. So. The adoption went well. My mum and dad adopted a little girl a couple of years later, and so they told me about being adopted before she came along, because I guess they needed to kind of explain that, or I don't know the full ins and outs. I don't know how they told me, which was with a storybook. So they had a storybook about another couple that, you know, got fell in love, got married. And adopted a child to make a family.
Mm.
So that's how they told me, which I think is a lovely way to do it. In terms of they told, so I don't even remember being told, but I do know that storybook was on my bookshelf as a kid.
And okay.
So I know that, and I only got the full story really from my birth mother's side, like 5 years ago when I got my adoption file.
Oh, okay.
So, what did I know? I knew very little, and they knew very little. So obviously, it's completely different. It's completely different these days. They collected me from an adoption council or agency or charity of some sort. I don't know what they call themselves. In Liverpool, where, so obviously February, it was about February 1967.
Okay.
So I was born in January. And so they thought that I was actually born in Liverpool. So, you know, I used to support Liverpool football club when I was a kid, you know, so I'd Leeds, which was the local club, and Liverpool, yeah. You know, and whoever was doing better. I had to get a passport for my first trip away, you know, without my mum.
Yeah,
when I was about 13, I think. And so they dug out my birth certificate or whatever with my second name. That's a different story. Well, you know, and it said that I was born in Wrexham.
Oh, really?
So yeah, that's where I was born. I didn't know anything more than that. Really. Until I got the adoption file. Until we got the adoption file 5 years ago.
Did you say so it was 5 years ago you got the adoption file?
That's right.
If you don't mind me asking, what was there a catalyst? Was there something that made you say, I want this now? Like, because that's a long way to go without that.
Yeah.
And
so
what changed?
So what changed was well, how far back do I go? So what changed actually was probably, I won't go back fully to the start, but about 6 years ago, I was, I had a bit of a fallout with somebody. And he knew me, and he knew that I was adopted, and he said that I needed some help.
Okay.
And I thought I was a pretty conscious person, you know, not in trauma or anything like that. And I bought I rang one of the helplines, you know, I went online, rang one of the helplines, and they recommended Nancy Verrier's book, The Primal Wound. And don't read it, by the way, for reasons that I am going to explain. Nancy Verrier was an American doctor, a GP, if you like, or an MD, what they call MD over in the States. Yeah. And she adopted a child, and she couldn't understand. Well, she wanted to understand the difference between her natural child, biological child, whatever language you want, and the adopted child. And she wrote this book, and she talks about this theory of the primal wound, and says that essentially adopted people don't like being rejected, adopted people don't like change, and adopted people looking to control things.
Okay.
And I thought, well, this explains me.
Yeah.
And then I kind of, about 6 months later, I realized that this doesn't, you know, that doesn't explain everything, because nobody likes being rejected. Nobody likes change, and everybody's trying to control stuff. But I kind of fell for this. In my pain, you know, as a 46-year-old bloke, I was in a lot of pain, and I went to see some therapists. Well, I spoke to a few therapists. Mm-hmm. I thought that they were all really weird, actually. And I picked the, you know, they didn't want to tell me about their process or any work that they'd done in the past, and it was my problem for asking them about themselves. Which was a really weird one for me. I think it's called gaslighting. They made it my problem rather than theirs. You know, their lack of transparency was my problem. But anyway, I ended up with one. I ended up with the best of a bad bunch, and during one of those sessions, I had this a shocking picture hit me. It came into my head, and that was of my birth mother rejecting me again, and as I'm doing air quotes, right? Listening on podcast. So I thought I had this. I felt a lot of anger and fear, and then I thought, I'm not having this. You know, I'm not having this fear.
Yeah.
Stopping me. Wrecking my life, really.
Yeah.
So that's why I did. I went on the journey, and that led me to getting the adoption.
I see.
And finding out, you know, we'll talk about the stuff, but finding out some stuff that was rather contrary to what I've just said.
it's interesting, isn't it? Because you're absolutely right when you say that sort of, I mean, I've personally not read The Primal Wound, but I hear a number of reviews about how it's a particularly difficult read. And it can actually be quite scary for adopters to read that sort of thing, because it makes everything sound like it's going to be so extreme. But when you break it down and what you just said there, you know, it's all well and good saying that people want control and hate rejection. It's so generic that it could fit for everyone, couldn't it?
Well, it does. I can be... I've spoken to Nancy Verrier, I am forever grateful for her writing that book. However, it is totally wrong, in my opinion.
Yeah.
it is false.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is actually happening, and this is kind of what I've learned, and this is so I've learned the truth of what's happening. And I've also heard that Dante Variable, it wasn't based on any research, right? Now, I'm not a big fan of research in science, to be fair, because, you know, everybody's got this idea that science is right, okay? But, and Boris, at the moment, with COVID and stuff, he's basically, he knows that people don't really trust politicians. And therefore, he can't just say, well, we're doing what I think is the best thing to do.
Yeah,
because that the journalists would just unpick that forever. Okay.
Yes.
What he does is he says, I'm relying on the science. Okay. But every country in the world is relying on the science with COVID. Okay. But everybody's doing different tactics.
Yes.
Right? So everybody's singing the same tune, as in we rely on the science, but everybody's doing different things because people kind of test, you know, trust science. Well, scientists used to think that the sun went round the earth. Scientists used to think that
like the atom was the smallest thing in the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Science isn't the current state of knowledge. It's not absolute truth. So anyway, going back to Nancy Varia then, right? So it's absolutely, In my opinion, it's kind of scary. It is scary, and it scared me, and I'm quite a sensitive guy. But I took it on board, and then when I realised that it was completely wrong, that was kind of like another step in my my consciousness journey. Right. So what's actually going on, right? It is we are going up and down, all of us, adopted or non-adopted, adopters or non-adopters, parents, child, whatever. We are all through our day going up and down a scale of human consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that scale goes from it goes from 0 to 1,000, and you know we're going between different parts of that scale. And some of us hang around in the lower part of the scale and then creep up a little bit. And some of us have a broader experience. And some of us, you know, we're all up and going up on the scale. So that scale of human consciousness is, you know, down at the bottom. 20 is shame, right? So we think that we are not good enough. You know, extreme. You know, and people who have extreme self-esteem issues are down in that space, right? Whereas something like anger, I think, is about 150. Pride is 180. Anyway, you know, we're going up and down a level of scale, which is essentially our mood or our level of consciousness. And at the higher ends, you know, people. So this guy, Richard Dawkins, he created this scale of human consciousness. And that's what's happening. Our mood is going up and down during the day. If I try and get a bit less scientific about it, our mood is going up and down during the day. And here's as a silly thing in terms of what this means, like a dog's wagging tail. I think that calibrates at something like 350 or 500. You know, there's an aura. You know, there's an aura around our pets, and that space of love, that unconditional love space.
Is
what's going on. Anyway, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So you went and you got your adoption file. How did that feel, sort of pre-opening it and then sort of actually opening it? How did that feel for you?
The guy giving me the file was, so there was two stages. So the first stage was getting the paper, piece of paper with my original birth certificate on. which felt really weird from an identity perspective because it had my first name on it. So I'm now Simon Jonathan Benn, but I was David Anthony Flower.
Oh, okay. So even your first name was different.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was a bit of a weird one. But that was step one. I got that. And then it probably took, I don't know how long it was, 6 or 9 months till I get in the full file. And all, the file had all the paperwork from my birth mother to the agency, from the agency back to my birth mother, all the notes from the meetings when she went to visit them at the adoption council in Liverpool. And then all the letters from the agency to my mum and dad, and from my mum and dad back to them.
Right.
So when I got the file, it was pretty weird. I've got it here. It's sat on that table over in the other side of the room. It smells really funny.
Okay.
Because it's 50 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
It's 50 years old. So that's 5 years ago, right, that I got.
Yeah.
9 years before that was the start of my kind of late adoption trauma, shall we call it, yeah?
Okay, yeah.
So as I was growing up, I didn't have a problem. I went to university and stuff, and I went into the family business, and then I took over the family business, and I had the financial roller coaster of running a small business became an emotional roller coaster. So most of my issues as a 30-year-old guy in my 30s were like a concern and worry about business. Adoption wasn't a factor. But then when I hit 40, I found out that bearing in mind my mum and dad had always told me that I'd been adopted, I found out that my teddy bear, I'm holding the
that we can see right now. It's
teddy up to the screen. We're doing this on Zoom.
Yeah, it's got a great vest on.
Yeah, so this was that was knitted for me by. That was knitted for me. No, it wasn't knitted for me. It was knitted for my teddy bear by my dad's mum, my grandma.
Yeah.
So I found out at 14 years ago that the teddy bear was from my birth mother, and that released a load of it was a volcano.
Yeah.
Not on the moment of hearing. That information, but a couple of months later, a volcano of negative feelings and emotions came out of me, anger and feeling unloved, and the teddy bear was a consolation prize. So really low on that scale of consciousness, you know, anger and shame and feeling unloved and stuff like that.
You say sort of anger and frustration, was that aimed at your birth family or your adoptive family or in general, or do you...
It was totally directed at my birth mother.
Right. Okay. So this teddy bear sort of erupted that volcano of anger, all directed towards your birth mother.
She didn't love me enough to keep me. I'm not going to swear, but there was a lot of profanity. You can perhaps imagine the adjectives that were used like that. She didn't love me enough to keep me. She gave me.
That's got to be a real. I can't even begin to imagine how that would feel. So I can't even begin the journey of empathy for how that would feel, if that makes sense.
I feel you. There's a lot of empathy in what you said, that you don't get the empathy. So I get it.
Yeah.
That makes me thank you.
No, that's fine. So a couple of weeks after, so it's almost like grief, isn't it? It's allowing that grief to settle in, so you're dealing with this, and a couple of weeks later it kind of hits like a volcano,
yeah,
and almost like a volcano of emotions. what happens next?
Well, I went looking to address these issues, essentially. So my issues, and this is post-rationalizing 14 years later, right? So I'm simplifying it greatly, but what was going through my mind was essentially desired for business success turned out to be a hollow victory. So business success hadn't made me happy. Adoption had made me unhappy. Where am I going to find happiness? Essentially, that's to try and sum it up without waffling on too much.
Yeah. So it's coming back to that identity, isn't it? Trying to, where do I fit and where am I going, kind of thing.
Well, it wasn't so much about identity. It was like, where am I going to find happiness?
Yeah.
It wasn't like I didn't feel. So the identity thing is, I don't feel it. Before we started recording, I was talking to Richard about Nicky Campbell, the adopted TV guy, the guy that does Long Lost Family. So I'm listening to his latest book at the moment, and he didn't feel that he fitted in as a kid. Now, I did feel that I fitted in. I didn't have any problems not fitting in. So I was looking for, I was like, so business hasn't made me happy. Business success hadn't made me happy. Adoption is making me unhappy in as a mass simplification. Where is happiness? That's what I was looking for. Wasn't about identity or trauma, or I was looking forward. So I'd had a lot of coaching, like business coaching, and business coaching makes you look forward. Therapy, from what I've experienced, which hasn't been a lot, kind of makes you look back. And if you look back into the darkness of trauma, then all you see is trauma.
Yeah.
And that's not really where we want to be looking.
it's interesting you say that, actually, because that's kind of Little Dude's stance on his early years experiences. If ever we sort of broach the subject of his sort of early years, he'll kind of say to us, so actually, I don't really want to be looking back at that. I'm happy at the moment. If I think about all of that, it kind of makes me unhappy, and I don't see the reason for doing that. Where's the benefit in going back to a place where you're feeling really bad? Instead, let's look forward. Let's look forward to some things that are going to make us in a good place. So, I can kind of see that. So did you find happy?
Yes.
Where was happy for you? Where was happiness?
It was underneath the trauma.
Okay.
It was underneath our feelings. It was underneath my feelings.
Explain more about that. How does that...
Well, so most people think, most people think that happiness is an outside job.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't. It's an inside job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most people think that, like I did, I'll be happy when.
Yeah.
Right. It's a now thing. Happiness is a now thing. And there's a difference between kind of like delight.
Yeah.
Looking forward to something in the future. Like, so for me, it's about going back to the swimming pool and to the pub after lockdown.
Yes. There's
like ecstatic, there's ecstatic happiness, and there's contentment.
Yeah.
The contentment is it's underneath the voice in our head that says that we're not good enough.
Yeah.
It's who we are. It's in our perfection. It's not in our it's not in our thoughts or our feelings. It's actually a little bit deeper than that.
Did you find that sort of accessing your adoption records and accessing that file, did you find that that started to sort of pick away at those pieces, or
it's been a series of happiness has come to me through a series of insights that have meant that my contentness, let's call it contentness, lasts longer.
Okay.
So I only got the records, the most transformative shift in my general level of happiness and contentedness of well-being probably happened about 14 years ago.
Right.
With the stuff that I learned then.
Yeah.
Not maybe 14 years, a couple of years after that, maybe after that. And then it's been a series of insights in which my world has got, my world has got easier.
Yeah.
When I stopped looking in the right, first of all, when I stopped looking in the wrong place, that was a good start. The getting the adoption file was big for one particular letter, one piece of documentation that was in the file, which was the letter from my birth mother about 4 days after I had she'd handed me over.
Yeah.
It's a letter telling the woman at the adoption council that she wanted, that my birth mother, Pat, she was called, wanted to buy me a teddy bear.
Right, okay.
Okay. And she wanted to buy that on the way to the adoption council to drop me off. But the traffic was really bad and she didn't want to be late.
Right.
And therefore, and she still wanted, and that had upset her. Me not having something from her had upset her. So she wanted the woman at the adoption agency to ask my mum and dad if she could buy a teddy bear and then send it on.
Right, I see. So that must have been quite profound then, because...
That was, you asked how I had felt getting the adoption file, and I dodged the question slightly because I hadn't told you about the teddy bear.
So the
teddy bear was the start of the consciousness journey, and it was a pivotal point further down the line when I realized this woman's love for me, my birth mother's love for me. And I don't, have you ever watched Nikki Campbell on Long Lost Family?
I haven't actually, no, I've not.
Well, if you ever watch it, I do watch it, and I am always in floods of tears when I see the birth, because the birth mothers, the biological mothers' love for their child is always, always visceral, there and obvious. And that reminds me I'm in tears when I, of being in tears reading that letter from my birth mother about the teddy bear, and feeling connected with her over, through a piece of paper that she wrote, she put ink on, 50 years before I read it. And I feel connected in that space of love for me. That's when I kind of really got her love for me in the reading letters. And there's lots of other stuff in the file. The amount of paperwork, and the amount of planning and foresight, and the story of why she you know, the story of why that she didn't she didn't raise me herself, because she'd been going out with this guy for 5 months, apparently. She told him that she was pregnant, and he didn't want to have anything to do with her, and denied that it was his. And she obviously hadn't been sleeping with anybody else, but you know, she didn't want to, in those days, stigma of single mothers.
Yeah.
She didn't want to raise me on her own, and she was doing the best thing. Her love for me and the best thing for me was bigger than her kind of selfish love to keep me. So,
yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because I think a lot of adopters and a lot of people, when they first come into the process, and when their knowledge is zero or very limited, most people come into the process and they feel quite a lot of anger towards birth families. And you yourself were saying, when you was looking at the teddy bear, you was feeling a lot of anger at your birth mum. But then actually, when we scrape away at the surface and we start learning about their stories, it helps us to understand that the picture is so much bigger than what we first saw, isn't it?
Yes. And I'd never felt that anger before.
Mm.
I'd never felt like that before. I'd never thought that way before in 40 years.
Yeah.
So in that moment, it felt like the truth, but it wasn't. It wasn't the truth. So I think I was talking to a woman who does a lot of research in into adoption stuff, and she said, "Well, this stuff can't. This what you're describing to me, Simon, is what we call confirmation bias. Yeah. So it's like a thought comes out of nowhere, because it came out of nowhere. It's like an ego defense mechanism."
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like indignation.
Mm.
It wasn't buried within me. You know, if you talk to a therapist say, well, you know, it was clearly all there along all the way. Not my truth. No, what I did was, you know, this idea came out of this. This is the bit, and I'm laboring this really because I'm not laboring it. I'm going in deep in it, because what I would love your listeners to get is an insight about what trauma is, what traumatic things and thoughts are, right? Because that's the happiness is underneath that.
Yeah.
Happiness is underneath that. So this is purely my experience, and clearly I didn't go through any I haven't said it, but I didn't go through any neglect or abuse before I was adopted. So I cannot speak for those adopted. A lot of people that are adopted these days have gone through that trauma, right? So
yeah.
I'm not speaking about any, I have no right to speak about their experience. I'm not speaking about their experience. I'm just speaking about my experience.
Yeah.
So this idea, I found out that the teddy bear was from my birth mother, and my instinctive reaction was, that's a bit curious. No more than that, right?
Mm.
A bit later on, 2 months later on, or 2 weeks, I can't remember exactly what it was. Then I was talking to somebody, and this. And we were talking about anger, and this angry feeling came out of me like an eruption of a volcano, right? So it's to do with what's going on in my head, not to do with the event, because I never had thought before. So what happened really was that, you know, if you imagine this, like it was like a snowball of negative emotion.
Yeah.
It started off at the size of a pea, and then I scooped some more snow together, And I patted it into Snowball. And then I started rolling it along the ground. Yeah. Like you do when you're making the base for a snowman or snow person, yeah. snow woman, you know. And it just got bigger and bigger. Now, that's what I did.
Yeah.
That's what I did. I mean, obviously I didn't do it on purpose. It's not my fault. I don't blame myself about doing it. But that's what confirmation bias is. That's taking an idea that is new, you know, and making it into, you know, like I made the mountain out of the molehill.
Yeah. And you just carried on building and sort of building on top of that emotion, didn't you?
Yeah, until I started, a couple of years later, as I started going on some, doing some kind of like personal development, sort of self-development, consciousness journey, which was like, I've never used this metaphor before, but it was like I put a hairdryer on the snowball.
Right. Okay. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and that snowball, but a hairdryer in real life, this is where the metaphor kind of loses its steam, but because, you know, it would take a long time for the hairdryer to melt a snowball. Yeah. Obviously, it would take a long time. The insights that I had, and the insights that I had are the reason I do what I do as a coach to adoptees and adoptive parents. The insights I had, basically, if you imagine the snow person's body, it shrunk like 90%.
Yeah.
Just like that. And then it's a series of shrinkings where and then all you're left with is a pool of water where the snowman used to be, and that water, that puddle evaporates.
And, yeah.
And what you're left with is a guy who's pretty contented.
Mm.
Most of the time. And if I am angry or upset about anything, it's got nothing to do with being adopted.
Yeah. So it sounds to me like I already know the answer to this, but I'll ask. But how big is adoption when you think of your own identity?
Oh, what do you mean by identity?
So I guess if you were sort of listing all the things that made you who you are, sort of personality traits, hobbies, interests, all things like that that make you who you are, I just wonder how high up on that list adoption would be, or if it would actually feature on the list.
Well, my take on identity is completely different to any of that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Interesting.
So, when we think of identity,
yeah.
Well, when I think about identity, am I getting too esoteric here for you?
No, you're all good.
Oh, Simon's a people pleaser. That's because he was adopted. He's asked Richard to clarify this. Absolute rubbish. Absolute rubbish, isn't it? Absolute rubbish. Okay. So, personality is not identity in my world, because personality changes. So, my take on identity is what's true forever. Yeah.
Okay.
So I personality is it changes, you know. It changes from, you know, who we're with,
mm-hmm.
and it changes, it goes up and down during the day, you know, it goes up and down over the years, it develops over time. So it's not who we truly are, right? People look at body, you know, well, bodies change. And we say my body or my hand. Well, we're the owner of the hand, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not the hand. Yeah.
Yep.
So if I heard this explained once in a different way, said, you know, if I lose my little finger in a accident at work, am I still me?
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Of course you are. Yeah.
Because so, we're not our bodies.
Yeah.
We're not our bodies, right? So if we're not our personality, we're not our body. The other thing about identity, somebody would go with identity, say, well, you know, you're Simon Benn. I said, well, yeah, I'm Simon Jonathan Benn, but I was David Anthony Flower. Okay.
Mm.
So if I've been, in inverted commas, both, I can't actually be either, can I?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Because identities is truth.
Identity. Yeah.
The truth is forever. So if I drop, I'm holding Teddy up to the camera, right? So if I drop him, obviously I wouldn't because I don't want to upset my Teddy, right? If I dropped him,
yeah,
I hurt him. But if I dropped him, he would fall down because that's, you know, the gravity is a truth, you know, within the thing.
Yeah.
So truth never changes. Yeah, the true truth never changes. So so we're not our personality because that changes. We're not our body because that changes. We're not our name because that changes. And sometimes it's less dramatic. You know, you know, your mum and dad probably didn't have a name for you before, or did your mum and dad have a name for you before you were born?
No, they didn't.
So, you know, you can't, it isn't, when people say identity, I mean the name, you know. So for me, that our true and other people say, well, we're not. Some people say that we are our thoughts or we're feelings, but those change as well.
Mm.
So for me, it's what's underneath all of that. So it's what some people might call spirit.
Okay. Yeah.
So this kind of came clear for me, unfortunately, when I saw my father-in-law, you know, he died. And It was clear to me that him wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what I mean by spirit is the kind of the life force, the commander of the body, the person that drives the body. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes
sense. Adoption isn't something that happens. Adoption is something that happened to me. It doesn't define me.
Mm.
It has nothing to do with who I am because adoption has nothing to do with spirit.
Yeah, I get that. That makes sense.
Still a bit esoteric, is it? I don't know.
No, I like it. I like it. It's it makes sense to me, sort of the way that you're explaining that. I like that.
Yeah. But if you... So I put that as a post, actually, on a Facebook, adoptee Facebook group. You know, adoption is something that happens to us. It doesn't need to define us. And I got 120 likes, about 30 loves, and a few comments, not too many comments, but all of them were, pretty much all of the comments were negative.
Oh, really?
So, you know, people saying, how dare you deny my life experience. Adoption has wrecked my life. Well,
yeah, it's, I always feel really sad. It upsets me to see that people have had a negative experience of adoption. And it's one of the main reasons for this podcast, actually, to see what else I can do to make sure other people don't have that experience. You're never going to eradicate it completely. That's impossible. And I know that. But if sharing my experiences and the experiences of others can actually help people to ensure that their adoptees come out the other end with a smile, in touch with their happiness and contentment, that then it's a win, isn't it?
It is unequivocally, and we're on the same page. We're doing different things for the same reason, and we are here today doing this podcast for exactly, and we're here today doing what we're doing for exactly the same reason. because trauma it doesn't define us. It isn't who we are. The piece, you know, what's underneath the trauma?
Mm.
What's underneath the trauma? So people go, what are you talking about, Simon? What's underneath the trauma? Well, yeah, the trauma, my best metaphor for this, and it isn't one of mine. It's one I've kind of, yeah, it's one I'm borrowing from a guy called Michael Neal. So if I'm going to hold up an object to the camera, can you feel like,
so explain? I feel like I'm in the crystal maze.
crystal maze, yeah. Okay, so I'm holding up a crystal. This is a piece of, dear listeners, this is a piece of glass to represent a diamond. Now, mm-hmm. I got this one off Amazon. It's about 2 centimeters tall. It was about £7. But my mum had a massive piece of glass, a massive diamond, which is about 9 centimeters tall. So if we, the metaphor is that we are all human spirit is humans are perfect diamonds. We are all born perfect. We are perfect in ourselves. And then we go through life and manure happens to us. Manure happens to and that different, there's different sorts of manure.
Yeah.
So there could be the manure of losing your losing your birth mother, being relinquished by your birth mother. There could be the manure of the abuse that happens to you in your birth family, and then there's all sorts of other manure as well. So we get like me, I was bullied at school, right? So and then other manure happens. Manure happens to all of us. So like we lose the ones that we lose the people that we love, and it's all manure, right? It's all manure, and that manure, kind of it covers and obscures the diamond.
Yeah.
But it doesn't change the diamond. It just hides it.
Yeah.
And then as we get older, we start to get manure in our head. So we have manure-y thoughts.
Mm. Like,
we're not good enough.
Yeah.
We're not good enough at, you know, maths at school because the teacher tells us that, you know, we're a slow learner. Or we're manure because we're not good at sport and we don't get picked for the team. Or we get dumped by our first love. And we start to think that we get manure-y thoughts. And they kind of wrap on top of the manure-y things that we go through. And it's just more and more manure hiding the diamond. And then we go to therapy. And the therapist wants us to concentrate on the manure, explore our manure, smell the manure, relive our manure.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. And all it does, that makes the manure, it's like if you look through a cross section of a tree, you know, where you can see the rings for every year of growth of the tree. Well,
yeah,
that's how the manure develops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And we are totally focused on the manure and the manure grows and grows and grows. And then we start to think that we smell.
Mm.
And we're losing more and more sight of, we lose sight of the diamond because there's more manure to hide it.
Very profound. But I see exactly what you're saying. It's about sort of it's doing everything in your power to remind yourself that there is a diamond there.
Well, not quite.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because you, so we're learned to, how do I put this? We're brought up on intellectual understanding. We're brought up on the importance of our thinking. We're brought up on positive thinking. We're brought up on strategies and techniques and all that sort of stuff, right? You know, as long as I keep reminding myself I'm the diamond, then I'll be okay, right? I've tried that, it doesn't work. So what actually drives change is the depth of our understanding. So we can get stuff intellectually, right? So Simon's making sense, or, you know, I'm listening to somebody else, I'm listening to one of my mentors, Michael's making sense, or George is making sense, or whoever I'm listening to is making sense. Mm-hmm. Right? That's all making sense. But we can watch something on telly, we can watch something on telly, a comedian, and we can say, that's funny, but we don't laugh. But we don't laugh, right? What we're looking for is an insight. When we get something, when we get, you know, when we really get the joke, when the insight is really huge. The bigger the insight, the more profound it is for in ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's there's no such thing. I came up with this about 18 months or so ago, and I love it. Right, there's no such thing as a secondhand insight.
Right.
Yeah. What does that mean for you? Because I've told a couple of people this, and I've never asked them. There's no such thing as a secondhand insight.
So I guess it's you don't get to tell me what my insight is.
Bingo, yeah, that's right, yeah. There's no such thing as a second, and there's no such thing as an epiphany. There's no such thing as a secondhand epiphany. So, like, we can have little aha moments, then we can have big aha moments, and then we can have holy mother of God moments. You know, there's a scale of epiphanies, and basically, the bigger the epiphany, the more insight it's going to be have, and that's where. That's what's worked for me. So it may well work for you. I just remember, I just need to remember that I'm a diamond. That might work for you because you've got a different map of the world or whatever, you know. That might work for you. For me, that kind of affirmation stuff hasn't worked. I've tried it and it doesn't work. What does work for me is those big moments of insight. And that's when the world changes in a moment, and you know when you realize that a way that you've seen the world is incorrect. So for me, you know, we talked earlier on about Nancy Verrier in the book. You know, when I realized that I realized that she was pinning the tail on the wrong donkey. So she talked about insecurity and attributed it to or fear of rejection, I think was what she did. And she attributed that to adoption or being adopted. When I saw that, when I had the insight, my insight, that wasn't when that insight happened to me, it wasn't like wrong. You swallowed that, Simon, but you were wrong. It was like, how on earth did I get that so wrong?
Yeah.
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 And the same with the letter about the teddy bear. You know, it was like tears of love and recognition of how wrong I had been.
Mm.
And those sorts of insight moments, that's what drives that's what, you know, insights of what's driven my the shifts in my level of well-being.
Okay, that's interesting. I'm very, very conscientious of time, and
yeah,
this has been really, really interesting. It's been fascinating to hear your insights, and I think proved to be really insightful for their own journeys and for journeys of parenthood as well, and perhaps how we can support our adoptees through their own journeys as well. So I think it's been super helpful, and I imagine I'm going to get some follow-up questions, and hopefully I'll be able to sort of tag you in when I launch the episode, and people can reach out to you directly or have a chat sometime in the future again.
Yeah, yeah. Could I? Because it's been a lot about me and my stuff, right? So could I just kind of sum it up from an adoptive parent's perspective? What I think that this means? Try and sum it up. I'd add some other things to it, right? So what I think that, you know, what I think is the most important thing for adoptive parents to know as an adoptee is that your love is the most important thing that you bring to your relationship with your adopted child, right? Because the love is what's gonna, the love gets you through the tough times, and gets you through any trauma. And it is all about the amount of love. So the love, okay, the love is the hairdryer, right? Yep. The love that melts the snow of the trauma, if there's any trauma.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. But like when I talk to other adoptive parents, and I'm not hung up on the vocabulary, and sorry if I apologize for how I express what this vocabulary is saying. It's just because I'm not bothered about getting it right. What I want you to do is to get the love bit right. So like, because that love is so clear to you and so true to you, it's so part of who you are and why you did this, right? Is that, you know, like, you kind of like you it's your secret superpower. And like any secret superpower that we've got, you know,
right,
we tend to kind of like, we dismiss our skills, we dismiss what makes us unique, and we kind of like, we see it in, so what your love is, the most, the love that you bring for a little dude, right? And is what you know, what gets you, that's what keeps you through. So coming up from a place from love and seeing them, seeing underneath, you love them despite, you know, everybody loves their kids despite the trauma that they've been through. And by focusing on the love that you're, and the perfection that your children are, that's what gets you through. That's what gets you through. So for me, it's all about love, and it's very little to do with techniques or, you know, what's going on in our heads. It's we're, you know, everybody, we've got very obsessed with mental health, where it's not the power is in your heart. It's not about what's going on in our heads. It's about what's going on in our hearts. And focusing on the perfection of the child underneath the trauma, that for me is where to look. And that's what gets you through. And looking around in the trauma, I asked this question. Let me ask you this question. So, where is the line between understanding the trauma and making it worse?
Right. I I suppose that's the impossible riddle, isn't it? Because, yeah, you want to try and help, but each time that you try to help, are you just making matters worse? Or are you actually helping? I guess it's got to be sort of case by case specific, and only you can know.
There's only one way for me, or the fastest way to happiness is, I'm overcooking it, right? The fastest way to happiness and contentment, and it obviously it's an ongoing thing, because we have 70,000 thoughts a day, 70,000 thoughts a day. So the degree to which we can see our perfection, I'm holding up the diamond, the degree to which we can see that and the degree to which we can help our children see that perfection. That is the key. Identity as in the perfection and the unwoundable nature of the... So you are conscious of time, and I'm going on. I'm going to sum it up, right? Primary wound, no. Fundamentally unwoundable, yes.
Yeah. I like it. It's, that's really, really powerful and really, really helpful stuff, Simon. It's,
And please do reach, please do reach out for me if that's appropriate. Check me out on my website, simonben.co.uk, simonben.co.uk. There's loads of resources on there. So
amazing. Thank you. And thank you so much for making the time to talk to us and sharing your story. It's incredible.
Honoured. Complete pleasure. Thank you so much.